Thank you all for inviting me once again to be here with you. It always says it's a real joy, and I anticipate our time together. So I think, what should I talk about? What should I share? What might be of use to people this time? And what I wanted to share this week is I wanted to talk about stories. I was moved as people would come to the front and drop the pebble in the chalice and tell a story. Sometimes the stories are of something wonderful, or it might be about something difficult. But stories are one of the ways that we make sense of our life. And it's so wonderful to have people hear our stories. And we do that for each other here in this congregation. And it's also sometimes a risk that we get caught up in our stories. We get swept away by our stories, and we begin to think that those stories are the whole picture. But that's not always true. So today, I actually want to tell a story for myself, about myself. You may have noticed that I wasn't around for as much about the last year or so, and it's because I was ill. And so I want to tell the story about this illness. And I want to tell about how I was able to look at that story and transform that story from a story of suffering into a story of liberation. And my hope is that not just that you'll hear my story, but that you'll be able to do something similar with your own stories. I hope you'll feel empowered to turn your own suffering into stories of liberation. About 10 years ago, I started having symptoms of a neurological condition that's common in my family. And it really wasn't any big deal. It was just kind of an annoyance. Didn't disrupt things for me too much. But 2 years ago, it started getting worse. And it got dramatically worse. And I had these sensations and involuntary movements in my body that made it very difficult for me to sleep. And so I began to dread going to bed because I found myself unable to sleep and just wanting to crawl out of my skin. It was really difficult. So, of course, being the modern Western person that I am, I went to my doctor and I said to my doctor, make all this disappear. Make me better. And the doctor told me, well, I've got good news and I've got bad news. The good news is that there are a number of drugs that we can use to treat this condition. The bad news is that none of them work. So he put me on this, started on this algorithm of drugs. And some of them made things better for a while, and then they made it worse. So I took the first drug and I'd get some relief, and then it would be better, and then it would get worse. So I have to withdraw from that drug and go on to the next drug, make it better for a while, then it made it worse, and withdraw from that drug and go on and on and on. And I spent about 18 months hoping that each new drug would restore me back to the way I used to be. And then I would endure the withdrawal of each one of those drugs when they didn't do that. And there was two withdrawals. There was the withdrawal of the physical dependence on this drug, which was not very fun. But what was really bad was the withdrawal of hope. Because with each new drug, I began to hope that things would get better. And they did for a while, but then I crashed when it didn't. For 18 months, my life was not what I wanted it to be. I slept 1 to 2 hours a night for 18 months, and I was so exhausted that I could just literally feel the life energy draining out of me. Here I've worked with dying people for so long, and I got to actually feel what it feels like to have the life draining out of my body. And I spent my nights walking the house alone in the dark because that's the only way that the symptoms would be reduced. and I would listen to my wife and my dog snoring together as I walked in the dark. This left me without enough energy to do the things that I love to do. I stepped back from my Zen teaching. I stepped back from being with you. I stopped exercising. I didn't have energy for that. I didn't see friends. I didn't travel. I didn't make music or hike in the woods or build furniture or do any of the things that gave my life a sense of meaning. But what I did do was I suffered. You know, with this condition, any time that I sit down or lie down, I have symptoms. But as long as I'm moving, the symptoms are gone, or at least reduced. So I would stand there next to my bed in the night, in the dark, night after night, just exhausted as I could be, and rock back and forth to get some motion in my body. And I would wish that things were different. And I think wishing is too mild of a word. Actually, I stood there and I was angry. And I was frustrated. And I was tearful. And I was frightened. And I was outraged. You know, and if you look at all those things together, that is the very definition of suffering. I was suffering. And this went on night after night, week after week, month after month, until one night, in the middle of all that suffering, I remembered the Buddha. The Buddha had spent years seeking an end to suffering. He went from teacher to teacher. He went from practice to practice. He even denied his own body food in the belief that if the body was the source of suffering, maybe I can starve this out of me. And he almost died. And when he was saved by a little girl who fed him, and he had recovered some of his energy, he made a promise to himself, and he said, "I will go and sit at the foot of that tree and face whatever comes my way until I find a way through this human suffering." And he did that. And he sat there under that tree, and he faced things exactly as they were, and he did find the way through suffering. Now, I'm not the Buddha. I'm not a Buddha. But I was facing something similar to what the Buddha faced. So I had spent months seeking an end to my suffering, and I went from drug to drug, just like the Buddha went from practice to practice. I read all the medical literature I could find and talked to all the doctors I could talk to, just as the Buddha had gone from teacher to teacher. And I too had exhausted myself with resistance to the way things were, the resistance to my body. And the Buddha had done that too. And just as the Buddha sat at the foot of the nearby tree, determined to understand, in that moment, in that one night, I stood next to my bed in the dark, determined to understand my life as it is, not as I wanted it to be, but as it actually is. And I discovered that I had to find what the Buddha had found, which was a determination to be with things as they are. So in that moment, by the bed, in the moment that was as dark inside of me as it was in the room I was standing in, and a moment that did not bring things to me that I liked, I saw that this is the only moment I have. This moment that I don't want is the only moment I have. And I can throw it away, wishing that things were different, but this moment I don't like is the only moment I have. And when I did that, something became free in me. I still had the physical symptoms, but my suffering was greatly reduced. So why do I tell you this story? I'm not telling you this story because I'm a Buddha, because I'm not. I'm not telling you this story to compare myself to the Buddha, to say, well, look what I did. Just no, that's not it. I'm telling you because I have two things in common with everyone, including the Buddha. And those two things are, number one, we all suffer, and number two, we all have the capacity to transform that suffering into liberation. This is true about all of us, not just the Buddha, not just me, you too. I think a Buddha is someone who's very good at transforming their suffering. And I'm just a Buddha to be. I'm just a Buddha in training. I'm not so good at it. That's the story of my suffering, but you could tell the story of your suffering as well. Every time you get up and drop a pebble into the chalice, you tell the story of your suffering. And it's an important thing to do. And I want to mention three different ways that telling the story of our suffering is important. And you might notice yourself in any of these three ways. But I've noticed that they sort of go in order. One, two, and then three. So see if these seem familiar to you. So initially, the first step in telling our stories is that we tell our suffering stories to overcome the delusion that I don't suffer. Right? All of us want to project an image of perfection. When you go to a party and someone asks you how you are, what do you say 99% of the time? Oh, I'm fine. I'm great. Yeah, everything's great. I'm okay. But that delusion that we don't suffer is suffering. You know, for me to stand there and not think I was suffering while I actually was just making it worse. I had to really see that I was suffering. That anger and frustration that I felt was not a justified response. That was more suffering. I was creating that. So I wasn't yet telling the story of my suffering to overcome the delusion that I don't suffer. I had to go through that stage. So that's one reason to tell our stories. One of my favorite teachers says, until you realize you're a complete mess, you haven't begun to practice. And he's basically saying the same thing. Until we can say, I'm actually suffering, we'd have no way of solving it. So that's the first step. The second stage of telling our stories is we tell the story of our suffering so that we can see it clearly. Right? All stories of our suffering are just stories. And all stories are incorrect to some degree or another. I'm experiencing this right now because my son, who's 27, he and his partner have moved back home so that they can go to school. And I'm having many more conversations with my son than I usually do. And the stories he tells about his childhood, our time together, don't sound anything like my memories of them. He's remembering it his way, and I'm remembering it my way. Is one of us right and one of us wrong? I kind of think we're both wrong. I think we're both misremembering the truth. So we tell our stories so that we can see them clearly, and we can see the incorrectness of our stories clearly. So like my son is showing me, I think all of us, we get our stories of suffering, they start mostly when we're very young. And so we tell the story to ourselves as a young person using a young person's mind, a child's mind. And a child's mind is not fully developed. And so a lot of what comes into the child's mind gets put in here as fact. This is the truth of the matter. But we know that we don't store things that that are actually true. We store them as our perceptions. So we go around carrying the story thinking, this is what my parents did. This is what happened to me. This is the injustice that occurred. And that is largely wrong. It at least has the possibility of being wrong. So now that we're adults, we can look back at those stories and say, I wonder what's actually true here in what I'm telling. So that's the second reason that we tell our stories, is so that we can see them clearly. And then the third, and I think the final reason that we tell our stories, is we tell the story of our suffering to see it in a whole new way. Rather than a story of my suffering, the stories become about our suffering. And there, it's true that maybe there are times in my life when I've been oppressed, for instance, received injustice. But that's really our story. We've all been oppressed. We've all received injustice. And when I can tell this story as our story instead of my story, suddenly my heart cracks open with compassion. It's no longer poor me. It's us. And together we can find a way out of that. But poor me, I can't. All by myself, I can't. But the story about us, yes, we can do something about that. And this helps us so much, because one of the pitfalls of telling our stories is that we begin to create an identity around them. I'm the one who was abused, we might say. I'm the one whose father abandoned me. But when we tell the story as our suffering, we can embrace all of that as a necessary ingredient for our liberation. All of us have suffered. All of us need compassion. And here I am to put my arms around you. My teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, used to say, no mud, no lotus. If there's not suffering, there's not beauty. They have to go hand in hand. No heaven, no hell. No difficulty, no compassion. So that's my story. I'm still working on getting better, and finally, the very last drug on the algorithm has been effective. Woohoo! I'm sleeping! If I wasn't sleeping, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be able to. But I am. And I'm so lucky. And I never thought that I would be the sort of person that takes this very powerful drug, and I'll probably be taking it the rest of my life. But here I am. That's the truth of my life. That's the way it is. So I don't consider myself cured. I consider this a reprieve. This may come back. This likely will come back. But right now, I'm enjoying my life because I can do what I want to do again. It makes it so, so precious. So that's enough about me. What about you? What about your suffering? What stage of those storytelling steps are you at right now? Are you telling your story to acknowledge that you actually suffered? Are you telling your story so that you can see it clearly? Are you telling your story so it's no longer your story, but our story? None of those is right or wrong. It's just interesting to be able to see where you are. right now. So I really want you to know what I learned from my story, and that's this: facing what we do not want with courage and clarity and kindness is how we transform our suffering into liberation. I'm going to say that one more time. Facing what we don't want with courage and clarity and kindness is how we transform our suffering into liberation.